Hello there, and welcome to the first Roy Harper podcast. This is episode one for September 2007. My name is Paul Davison, and I run the internet site stormcock.net, where you can find a whole bunch of Roy and Nick Harper fans ready to talk about anything and everything, really. This podcast will, I hope, be about a monthly affair, kind of depending on how much news there is and what other work I've got going on. It's an entirely fan-run production, and there's no profit being made from this whatsoever. Each episode will have roughly the same structure, which is that we'll start off with some news, we'll have a bit of music, then every month I'm hoping to get interviews, and we have the first interview this episode with Mr. Steve Bailey, who's an old friend of mine and a very good Roy Harper fan, who I managed to persuade to come down into my recording basement last night, and we did a quick interview, and I think it turned out pretty well. I'm going to have a section called the A to Z of Harper, where I pick out something beginning with A to start off with from the lyrics of the songs, and just talk a bit about it and play an example of it in use in the music. We'll also have a listener feedback section, although that's going to be a bit sparse this time around since this is the first podcast. Anyway, let's start off with some news. There's actually quite a lot going on at the moment. In July, Roy finished his three gigs at Clonakilty, which has become, for me anyway, a yearly event and a good excuse to go over to Ireland. A lovely place, good people, decent Murphys and all the rest of it. Unfortunately, that's going to be the last one for a while. Roy has said that he wants to settle back a bit from performing live for the time being and concentrate on writing and hopefully recording the next studio album, because he's become quite aware that he's had too many distractions, basically, and hasn't been forced really to get on with the job of writing. You know, it's not kind of like you take yourself off to an attic somewhere in Europe and just get on with it. There's too many real life interruptions. Anyway, so he's getting on with that, and I'm hoping that we'll have a studio album at some point in the next year or two. However, on the live news front, there was a bit of a surprise, because it turned out that he is actually playing at the Albert Hall on the 28th of September. There's an American folk artist called Joanna Newsom, who plays the harp and sings. The great Roy Harper fan, and asked him if he'd be interested in doing support for her, for her Albert Hall gig. Roy obviously agreed. He's going to be doing a 45-minute set. Unfortunately, before the news even got to us, the concert had sold out long before that. However, the Albert Hall seemingly does get some return tickets, which they then put back for sale on their website, because I managed to get a ticket for myself a couple of weeks ago. So I would say that hope is not lost. If you're interested in this, it's probably worth continuing to go back to the Albert Hall website and hammering on it and seeing if any tickets become available, because that's how I got mine. I will be going to the gig, as I say, and I will tell you what it was like if you didn't manage to get there yourself. The other big news, really, is about reissues. The six-disc BBC set is imminently going to be reissued with new cover art, which is very good news, actually. I don't know if you've got or heard any of that. I'll be playing something from it in a moment. When it first came out, the artwork was quite basic. It's basically like a reel-to-reel tape with different colours per disc. And the new set has got some really nice photos of Roy with a sort of stylised red background. I've actually got scans of that on the stormcock.net website if you want to have a look. Anyway, that should be coming soon. The other big news is that Stormcock itself is going to be reissued as well. This is huge news for me, because it's my favourite Roy Harper album. Roy has given me a preview of the artwork. There's a new 20-page booklet going to be included in what should be a fairly deluxe issue. There are new photos, there is the full lyrics of all four songs, there are little poems and writings about each of the songs. It makes a really nice thing to look at while you're listening to the music. And talking about the music, Roy has actually remastered the album as well. He has tidied up the audio, he says, and made it much more what he originally intended the album to sound like, I guess. I haven't heard it yet. I don't know how intrusive the remastering is, although if I know Roy, it will be done properly and sympathetically. There's been a little bit of a furore, really, on my Stormcock list about whether he should even touch the audio of something that he released in 1971. For my part, I think he should. He should. If you look back at what happened, for example, with the Led Zeppelin CD issues that came out, when Jimmy Page went back and remastered them, the whole sound was transformed and it was so much clearer, yet the basic energy and rawness of the early albums, for example, wasn't lost at all. So I'm hoping for something similar to that. So without further ado, we're going to play you now track 6 off of CD 4 from the BBC tapes. This is a track called Home, and it's Roy performing with a full band, which is relatively uncommon, I'd say, in a gig context. Here we go, this is Home.
I need some loving.
That was Home from the BBC Tapes Volume 4. That was recorded in concert from the Paris Theatre, London, in 1975. And that was Roy playing with his band at the time called Trigger, which featured Roy on vocals and guitar, Chris Spedding on lead guitar, Dave Cochran on bass, and Bill Bruford on drums. Okay, next up is our interview. I did this in my basement last night with Steve Bailey. He was actually here in person, so we were able to play around with our new microphones and so on. So any strange audio oddities are entirely my fault. Hopefully I'll get better at it as we go along. Here we go. Right, I'm sat in my basement with an old friend of mine, Steve Bailey, who volunteered, or was rather press-ganged into being the first Stormcock podcast guest. So, Steve.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, I've known you for a long time, and I know you quite well, but most of the listeners may not. So what would you like to say about yourself in 15 words or less?
Cool, well, that's scary. You didn't tell me there was going to be a quiz. So, yeah, I'm Steve Bailey. I live in Hartford. I'm the other half of what used to be the terrible Steve Bailey and Earl Rose chaos combination. But that's a thing of the past. But we're both here enjoying Roy Harper's music and drinking beer in Hartford.
Okay. So the first obvious question is, how did you hear about him? What were the circumstances and what were your initial impressions?
Well, that's a triple barrel question, that, isn't it? So I don't actually remember exactly where I first...
I thought you might say that.
Up, but I do recall it was around about 1986. I'd just come back from a holiday in Wales with a bunch of people that I'd known from school and picked up in the pub and waifs and strays and that kind of thing. Not as many people as wanted to go got to go on the holiday, so we were looking for something communal, enjoyable to do soon afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I spotted an advert proclaiming Roy Harper in the 100 Club and playing the voice of Have a Cigar, Trump card.
Ah, right.
And that dragged a few people along, so I guess about 8 or 10 of us, perhaps, something like that, scuttled off to Oxford Street and into the bowels of the 100 Club, not really knowing an awful lot about Roy's music, just to see what we would get. At the time, I was just getting into some English folk music, so the idea of one man and a guitar really quite appealed to me,
right,
from the scratch. And one of the things that I like most about Roy's music is not necessarily the music itself, but the stories behind the songs. That's really what holds my attention. Songs about things, about life, about just seeing what the world's all about, human experience.
Well, I think that's why he calls himself a poet more than a musician, because it's really what poets do. They comment on the human condition and talk about what's going on and make you think about things in different ways.
So, yeah, so my first impression was, this is good stuff. I'll be doing some more of this. I'm not quite sure what some of the guys thought, or actually remember quite what I thought when he branched into Millwall, which came as a bit of a surprise after the rest of the material.
Did he have the Mohican wig on?
He had the Mohican wig and the full 9 yards and the scarf and everything. So that was a bit of a surprise, but, beer and spliff helps the world go round, say I, and everybody had a really good time, really. And it wasn't long before I noticed that he was playing somewhere else. And there wasn't any question about, shall I go? It was, how can I get there?
So it was an instant sort of click for you then?
Yeah, I think it was.
Because a lot of people are sort of initially a bit taken aback, A, by the amount of chat between the songs, or B, by the somewhat idiosyncratic voice,
Voice, I've never really had a problem with his voice, although I'm a great hater of Bob Dylan. I like
Me
the
too.
Stories,
join the club.
Can't abide the man's voice.
Great songwriter. Leave it to other people to do the singing.
Yeah, but the banter. No, I'm a big fan of banter. I really enjoy Robin Hitchcock's music too, which I guess is probably equally bizarre from time to time. But once again, the banter in between is really quite surreal sometimes, and that's all part of the experience for me. I'm really happy to have banter. I get quite cross when there isn't any.
I mean, there has been the odd gig when he's just sort of gone for the music and not done any chat and not done any explaining, and you think, hang on, this isn't right, this is all a bit too professional, really.
Yeah, I'm sure Roy's really going to thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I can't actually remember when we first met, but it was around that time because I started going to my first gigs around 87, 88. I'm not quite sure, actually. And we obviously met at a London gig, and it may have been at the Half Moon, it may have been at the 100 Club. I think it might be the 100 Club. But yeah, I cannot remember because I'm getting old and my memory is not what it used to be.
Yeah, I can't do any better for you there.
If anybody knows...
If anybody knows where we met
Steve
each other...
And I met, can you write in, please?
Can you tell us, please? Certainly, if I didn't know you before, Roy played at Cambridge Folk in the late 80s, then that may have been it, but I think perhaps it was before. That's certainly when I met Dave and Sue Burnham, I think, for the first time.
I got to know them through the mailing list, actually, because Sue was working at Sussex Uni and rang me up, actually, when I was working at London Uni. So maybe you got to know them first and then they introduced you. But who knows? It's all terribly boring for the people listening, probably. All right, the next obvious questions. What do you like best out of his works and what do you like the least?
Okay, so I'm going to not really buck a trend here, and I'm certainly not going to get any disagreement from you, because the more I re-listen to Stormcock, the better it gets.
Right.
I also really enjoy, as I said, the long story, so despite the slightly bizarre intro sometimes, and really quite bizarre life sometimes, I guess, you know, one of those days in England is good. I quite like the storytelling. I like the England's green and pleasant land aspect of it. You know, a bit of nostalgia is good. But, you know, it's kind of quite a wide-ranging song. That's a good story. That speaks to me. Old cricketer. Can't beat a game of cricket. There's nothing better than sunny Sunday afternoon.
I beg to differ, actually. You can beat a game of cricket, but the song itself is great.
Well, you know, I was going to have to leave that to fester, I'm afraid. I think you're wrong. And I'm sure that every right-minded person out there will think that you're wrong too.
Probably.
Sometimes it's just reminiscent of environment, and I like that. What don't I like? Well, it's always really hard to pick things that you don't like. I think you just kind of edit them away from your mind for the most part. What I don't like... is I don't like the Green Man, so I'm sure El can come and...
I'm hoping to get the rant from the horse's mouth, so to speak, at some future date.
I won't go into that, but certainly, although everybody would think from what I've said that I really enjoy the more pastoral music, you know, I like it when he's angry and has something to say as well. That, I think, is his best work, really, even though it sometimes touches on the green and pleasant land kind of angle. I think getting something off his chest, that's when he's best.
Well, I agree. I mean, if you look at songs like Hangman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Out of the later songs and White Man and stuff like that, out of the earlier ones.
Really the prime
the fact that people still call out for those all the time must mean that it strikes a chord with people, you know. And it makes people think and he's prepared to stick his neck out and do things like that. And thus not be in the top 10.
Yeah, which, you know, perhaps is a good thing. If he was in the top 10, well, would he be censored? I guess the answer is that people would like to censor him. I'm a staunch advocate of, you know, censorship is just an evil, really.
Yeah.
While censorship is in the world, I don't think it protects people. I think it pushes things underground. And I think underground issues tend to ferment deep-rooted resentment and anger. I guess I'm suddenly verging on the edge of a rant of my own here.
That's very nicely put, Steve.
You know, I don't think that's helpful, and I think the fact he's not in the top 10 is a shame. I think it's a shame people can't deal with that. That's really what the shame is.
Yeah.
I guess he'd quite like to. I guess in a way some of us would like to see him there. It's quite nice to champion your cause sometimes, but...
It would change everything.
I think it would hugely change the dynamic of...
I'd still like to see it happen.
...of the gig, you know?
Yeah. Just going back, you said Stormcott was, you know, at the top of the list, which strikes me to ask you what you think about remastering it. There's been a bit of discussion about, oh dear, he shouldn't change it, it's my treasured possession, how can he remix it, etc. Any views?
I actually been looking at the discussion on the list this afternoon, and I guess there is a little glimmer of people being a bit almost precious about it, really. But, you know, it's not our work, it's Roy's.
Yeah.
If he didn't get it the way he wanted it, then why shouldn't he get another crack of the whip? Some of that, I guess, is just going to be about the technology, you know, higher fidelity, whatever
right.
that means.
Right.
Less hisses and scratches and pops, I guess. A lot of those do seem to me to be gone. But if the man wants it better, then let him get it better. And if there's things that he would like to change, well, you know, the devil's in the detail sometimes, isn't it? The overall feeling of it, I don't think he's going to change. And I can't see Roy messing with it to that extent. But there's obviously things he's not happy with.
Well, I'm kind of thinking about comparing it to what happened with the Led Zeppelin CDs, because when they first came out on CD, they were sort of from the analog whatever,
yeah,
hissy, not so good.
Great, were they?
And then Page went off and did whatever magic he does, and it all suddenly got a million times clearer. Yet he didn't bugger about with the actual mix.
The real sound didn't change; just the kind of what wasn't quite in the sound,
yeah,
changed. And yeah, you know, I'm sure I'm not expressing this terribly well, but I don't. Someone that does a good job makes it better, but you don't actually notice exactly how it's better. You just get the feeling afterwards.
Yeah.
That was different to what it used to be. It was somehow maybe just bigger, a fuller sound, something like that.
Well, that's how I feel also about the recent Van de Graaff generator reissues, which of course you won't have heard, and we probably shouldn't start discussing prog rock at this juncture.
No, let's not. we'll do that another day.
Okay, who else do you like as much as, if not better than Roy, just to give us a sort of better idea of your all-round musical taste, just for fun?
Well, okay, so just for fun then. So I did, like I said, I was getting into English folk music back in the late 80s. I'm a big fan of Richard Thompson.
Yeah.
I've already mentioned Robin Hitchcock. On a really different angle. As you know, you're probably desperate to get me to confess on air, as it were, that I'm a really big Hawkwind fan.
I don't think you need to confess that. I think you should be proud of it.
And and what else do I like? There's a vast amount of shelf space in my house given over to the Levellers, which I kind of view as I don't know whether I view of that as being folk or being slightly punk. I guess that angle's softened over the years with their music, but I think it comes down to probably the same attraction that's in Roy's music. It's real stories about real life, often people with an axe to grind.
On a side topic there, I mean, that's going to the issue of categorisation, and it's impossible to categorise Roy's stuff because it's been all things at various times, and I don't like categorising it, but sometimes people need to be able to pigeonhole something in order to understand what they're getting.
Yeah, I don't really understand how it's useful. No, I haven't got anything useful to say about that, other than I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a very useful distinction sometimes, because there are so many pigeonholes. The difference between one and another is not all that great sometimes. It's between extremes. People know what they like and know what they don't like. People play other people music. That's how you learn things about what you like.
I think you're right.
It's not about, I like prog, so I'll go and listen to Van de Graaff Generator. You know, the argument that we were trying to avoid was about, is Hawkwind prog? You know, say I.
If you like Hawkwind, you'll love Van de Graaff Generator.
Yeah, see, that's where the categorisation goes wrong,
yeah.
Because I don't.
Okay, we'll have to work on that one then. Okay, the next thing, we're reaching the end here, but do you have any particular memories of gigs or festivals or anything that you'd like to share that are relatively airworthy?
Well, what I've always really tried to recall in full was just the most excellent in-between song banter that came out. I guess it was one of those gigs between Christmas and New Year, again in the 100 Club, and it was really packed out, and Roy really couldn't be bothered, I think, to get from the stage backstage to have a break, so he kind of sat and talked and drank. And while he did that, he regaled us with the most marvellous story going back, I guess, to the early 70s. It was a Christmas story involving dropping acid at a hoogig in the Roundhouse, a young Nick throwing wine over Elton John's girlfriend.
I think I've heard that
one. Crashing a car with Pete Townsend on the way to the Ronnie Scott's. And it just was the most excellent, entertaining story. And I'm sure I had it on tape once upon a time, but sadly, that's now lost to me. So if anybody out there's got that, I'd love to hear that again. That's certainly one of the recollections of a Roy gig that I like the most.
Mm.
Other stories, I guess, are not really stories that have got so much to do with the music, but stories that are about getting to the music, what happened after the music, people that you met whilst doing the music. And I guess all of those better be storage for another day.
Well,
anyway,
yeah.
I guess if I tell them all, I'll be cutting into other people's material, so I think perhaps I'll just leave it there.
Okay. All right. Roy is sort of, it's fair to say, he's at the sort of final stages of his career just purely because of his age, really. Perhaps that's being a bit unfair, but, you know, he's had a new lease of life since he had some surgery a few years ago, and his voice is very, very strong, and his playing is actually remarkably good at the moment. But he has said that he's going to sit back and concentrate on writing and recording at the moment and push the live gigs to one side.
Yeah, I think it's time for some new material. I'm sure, like everybody, you know, there's nothing better than a gig. But, you know, the gig is a transitional thing. I mean, great, it's a social experience. Nothing better than live music, I think. But new recorded music is really exciting too. And before much longer, something that's recorded becomes an old friend if you get into it. So, I think it's time for some new music. I'm really not... I don't buy into this, you know, the man's going to retire because he's old. You know, you just have to look at the example of all the old bluesmen. You know, those,
good point.
Some of these guys are in the, you know, well into their 80s.
Well, John Lee Hooker was going till the end, and he lasted for a hell of a long time and was remarkably good. Yeah.
So no, I don't get the retirement. I mean, everyone needs a break and needs a rest, needs to recharge the batteries. But I can't imagine what Roy would do if he didn't get to share his music with us live. Mm. I'm sure that he will always want to make recorded music to share, but the experience is so very different.
Mm.
So the gig's the thing, I think, that everybody identifies and enjoys the most. But, you know, that's because we're social animals, I think, really. And I think Roy is too.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, like the introduction to White Man on the Flat Baroque album, when he talks about people in poor countries gathering round and having this huge event out of music, and it being this sort of communication and festival type thing. And I think you're right, and there is something particular about going to gigs that brings people together. And, you know, when he was doing so many gigs at the Half Moon in Putney or wherever, and we always used to go to all three nights or whatever and meet up at the pub beforehand.
Yeah, maybe it's not about Rory growing old, Paul. It's about us growing old.
Right. Moving swiftly on, is there anything in particular you're hoping for from his sort of next record? I mean, are you hoping for it to be acoustic or band-oriented, angry? I suppose angry is a given what you've already said.
Yeah, I think that Roy still has issues that he wants to get off his chest. You know, sadly, the world isn't mending its ills, you know. They just seem to be compounding themselves, and I'm sure that Roy's getting angry about them just the same as we are. So I'd like to see a bit of vitriol.
Mm.
Acoustic, yeah, that's cool. I think I prefer his acoustic music, really. Band sound, I think. I'm not always sure that I like the band sound. I think the message gets lost sometimes.
I think the most successful thing he did with the band was probably HQ, and that gelled remarkably well.
Yeah, you know, I do enjoy HQ. It is one of my favourite albums, and I think that's maybe because the mix was just right there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that other attempts have been so successful. So, no, I can take or leave the band. I think probably I'd just like to hear Roy say, more acoustic music, please.
Mm. Okay, and just to finish off, we're recording this on the day that the Led Zeppelin one-off gig supposedly was announced, with the news that to get tickets you had to apply through a website and go into some kind of lottery, and that there were two tickets to be allocated per household, and that tickets would be £125 each. So are they going to be elitist? Are they going to be able to cut it? And is this the right way to go about it? Should they be doing it at all?
I don't know if they should be doing it at all. I'm sure that they don't need the money. I certainly know that I don't need to spend £125 to see them. The lottery, well, yeah, actually, I think that's not a bad thing. I don't think it should really be about who can get on the phone, who can get on the website quick enough, who's got the money in their pocket now to buy the ticket.
I mean, that's what's been bugging me about Glastonbury in recent years.
Definitely. So, actually, I think the idea of a lottery is good. Let everybody that's got an interest register that interest and names out of a hat.
Yeah.
It might not be convenient, but I feel it's fair. And I'm sure that there will be a lot of people who do want to get to that gig. You know, I've said that I think that's an awful lot of money, but I understand that it's not just them, it's a big bill, and I'm not quite sure.
Well, it is a charitable thing as well.
It's a fundraiser.
Yeah, it's not as if it's a straight in your back pocket job.
So I guess we have to let them off the hook, really. But no, I think I can live without them.
Part of me really wants to go, and part of me thinks it's just going to be a disappointment. Time will tell, I suppose. Okay, Steve. Well, I think we've covered everything on my list. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Well, I don't got a list, and pretty much, no, we've done pretty well. I think we've hit the timing.
We've done just over 20 minutes.
So it only remains for me to say thanks for letting me be the guinea pig. I won't let you forget it. I shall be doing my damnedest never to listen to this. And it's time you put a beer in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, fair enough then. Okay, thank you very much, Steve. Apologies for the low levels on Steve's voice during the interview. I've boosted it a bit, which probably means I've deafened you myself. Sorry about that. Get it right next time. If you're interested in being interviewed for this podcast, get in touch with me. My address will be read out at the end, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you. You don't actually have to come to Hartford to talk to me in person. I'm planning to do interviews by phone or by Skype, so we'll see how that works out. Okay, the next section is the A to Z of Harper. And for the A, I've chosen Albion. This crops up in a couple of Roy Harper songs, The Spirit Lives and One of Those Days in England. And Albion is actually what's called the most ancient name of Great Britain. It's Celtic in origin, and it seems to be very popular with poets and songwriters. It actually crops up in the Led Zepp song, Achilles' Last Stand. One of the lines goes, "O Albion remains sleeping now to rise again." And Roy has used it in some of his more kind of English songs. One of Those Days in England is a miracle of Englishness, and somehow manages to encapsulate everything about what it is to be a Briton resident, I suppose. I wanted to play you one of the songs of Roy's that uses the word. And then I found that he's actually got a version of The Spirit Lives on the Poems, Speeches, Thoughts and Doodles album, which was a spoken word CD that he brought out a few years ago. It contains the original poems, but also read out versions of some of the lyrics of some of the songs. And I thought it would be really interesting to listen to that because, as I mentioned before in the interview with Steve, Roy is considers himself primarily as a poet and decided to use music as the medium to deliver those poems to people. And I listened to this version of The Spirit Lives on the CD. It is incredibly poignant. It's very dynamic, and I think it's well worth the listen.
Where once were men are now but sheep, a fiction and far cry from planet Earth's proud animal who would be you and I. Alack, our forebears drank the cup of poisoned alibi and made excuses far and wide and made God in the sky. This boogaloo's now round the world, bad trips for everyone. no more the man of paradise or the Celt of Albion. They queue like burning moths to spread the all-time vicious lie. You Christians destroyed our tribe. I'll fight you till I die. And you can cut me down for what I've said, but goodness lives where God is dead. The history of religion is the history of the state. Incestuous exploiters of a catalogue of hate. The man of peace was overrun by armies of the Lord, who signed their names to any war and sang to praise the sword. The mission heads for outer space, the voices ring and swell, with aeons of self-righteousness the senseless echoes knell. The words get much more meaningless, even plainer to tell that those who would pronounce this God are those who make this hell. And you can cut me down for what I've said, but goodness lives where God is dead. Love is the great triumph over Christianity. She made a fool of silly priests. She mocked authority. She filled her bed with happiness. She gripped his loins for joy and felt ecstatic agonies and screamed the sweetest cry. Her children are the legacy of failure to be chained, an everlasting mutiny of flowers where it rained. They rise out of oppression and they speak with one accord. The fountains breathe. The spirit lives. The future rests assured. And you can cut me down for what I've said, but goodness lives where God is dead. But to say that God is dead presupposes that he was at some time alive. Oh, 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 what an old fool I am.
Okay, we're nearly at the end of the programme now. I'd very much like to get your feedback. If you have the ability to record your feedback and send me an MP3, please do so and I'll play it in the programme as long as it doesn't involve too much swearing. podcast@stormcock.net is the address to use for me, or you can find me on stormcock.net in one form or another. Other places to look, www.royharper.com for all your Roy Harper goodness, including buying the BBC set and so on and so forth. This podcast is copyright. It's issued under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license, which basically means you can give it to other people, but you can't change it, you can't claim you made it, and you can't nick the music that's inside. The Roy Harper music and spoken piece that I've used in this podcast are used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited, and it's not for copying or redistribution, but thank you very, very much, Roy, for allowing me to use your music in this podcast. Okay, assuming this goes well, episode 2 will be out sometime in October, but for now I'd like to leave you with one final Roy track. I was talking to Steve after the interview finished last night about festivals, and it made me realise that the nights are drawing in now, festival season's over. I hope those of you that got to festivals this year had a good time. We didn't have much of a summer, so I imagine some of you got wet. But I'd like to finish now with a track from the Unhinged live album, which is Roy singing Back to the Stones. See you next time.
This is a little bit older. This one's a product of seeing a pregnant female dragged across a field by her hair. I would really love to subscribe to that free music festival that we used to have in these islands every year, but which has now seen some kind of demise, albeit perhaps temporary. Anyway, it's a song about all of that. There's too much to say about that. Well, perhaps this is probably. rephrasing that by just saying this. Now, I'm sure I've said it to you before, but it's true, you know. So the more it spreads, the more it becomes a kind of public fact of life. It used to cost £26,000 to clean the site up at the end of that festival. And that was before the Wiltshire ratepayers and the local masons decided to get together with the police and ban it, or whatever. And at which point it started to cost the ratepayers £4 million in police wages. So the difference between 26,000 and 4 million has got to eventually turn up on the books. You know, they can't really be that stupid. Or can they? Read on.
My name is John Thomas. I come from the grave, where promises vaporize each latest wave. Straight from the breadline, with nothing to spare, from a world of high finance and no purpose, I'd just like to say I don't care. I prefer deprivation to such a slow death. Just wanna walk away, take a deep breath, do something other than fill the same street. Nothing to live for, no way, no way to feel my heartbeat. The summer will come and we will run to the sun again. The summer will come and it will be June 21 again. The summer will come, oh, back to the stones. The pigs came on Saturday, surrounded the road, tore down our house and destroyed our abode. The road to the hinge was blocked off by the state. 600 Hitlers with prejudice, prejudice driven by hate. Brute force injustice will not change my mind about how I think and the friends that I find. I walk with my head high and I'll never be drawn by promise of futures, but I just wouldn't want to be born. The summer will come and we will run into the sun again. Summer will come and it will be June 21 again. The summer will come back to the stones, back to the stones, back to the stones. Back to the stars. Back to the stars.